Light beer, dark money. Agree on something. Politics, culture, and the intersection of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And now, live from the Star Worldwide Network studios, here are your hosts, Light Beer Chris Clements and Dark Money Sean Noble.
Welcome back to another episode of Light Beer Dark Money. I'm Sean Noble.
And I'm Chris Clements.
And we have a very special guest.
We have a legend in the veterans community joining us today, Captain Charlie Plum, who was former POW in Vietnam.
6 years.
Hanoi Hilton. This is the 50th anniversary of their release.
It's amazing.
Which is unbelievable when you think about it. And, and of course, those issues hit home here in Arizona with former Senator John McCain and his efforts here in the great state of Arizona. So, Charlie, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, it's a pleasure, guys. Incidentally, John McCain was my flight instructor.
John was your flight instructor. Yeah, that's right.
He taught me to fly jets. And then I knew him pretty well. In fact, I lived next door to Joe McCain at the Naval Academy, his brother, and I served under their dad. So, and then he showed up 5 months after I was shot down in Hanoi. So I was the first guy to identify him because I knew him pretty well.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I mean, gosh, where do we even start with that? Because what you all experienced there and we've had some discussion on the show about it and the tremendous camaraderie and brotherhood and fellowship that was forged during that time is something to write books about. And many books have been written, including yours. And and now you're celebrating 50 years being of your freedom, and your story is still being written. It's still being told, and it's an amazing one. Tell us a little bit about that time in Hanoi and the lessons that were learned, and how you've carried that on that legacy.
I think the last 50 years have been really more important than the 6 years I spent in a prison camp thing.
Yeah.
And what we've done, a study was done a few years ago. In fact, you probably talked to Taylor Killian about this, where about a third of all the Vietnam veterans had PTSD. Of the prisoners of war, 4% have PTSD, primarily the guy shot down near the end of the war. They weren't tortured and were only prisoners of war for a few weeks or a month or two. And so the 591 men who came home, we've produced 17 generals, 7 admirals. Most of us retired as senior grade military officers. I retired as a Navy captain. We have doctors and lawyers and preachers and teachers, 2 senators, a bunch of congressmen. Of course, a vice presidential candidate and John McCain, a presidential candidate from 591 men. So it's really a pretty remarkable story of what we went through and survived and even thrived because of the experience.
And Charlie, what would you attribute that to? I mean, obviously, people react to challenges differently, but there must have been. I mean, it wasn't the experience itself, I don't think. It must have been the people that were there and the attitude that somebody or somebodies put in place to help others live up to that, right?
Absolutely. The leadership that we had with McCain and Jim Stockdale, Jeremiah Denton, all these Navy guys really took command. And what they did was they pretty much formed this team in tough situations where they couldn't see us, they couldn't talk to us, they couldn't hire us or fire us or bone us or any of the things that normal leaders do. And yet it's the best leadership I've ever seen. And they put together this team where we depended on each other and the camaraderie and that foundation, that network was vital. In our survival.
That's amazing. I mean, I think about how difficult that would be to be a part of, but the as you've pointed out, Charlie, the excelling that has happened from the men who came out of that is just remarkable.
Well, there's a name for it too, right, Charlie? It's called the Stockdale Paradox.
That's a little bit different. Stockdale Paradox. It was actually, it was an interview with Jim Stockdale, and the question was who survived, and he said that the optimists didn't survive. In fact, I wrote the author of that book, and I said, wait a minute, I was an optimist and I survived. And I talked to Jim Stockdale when he was alive, and he said the key was not positively thinking ourselves out of reality. He said, the guys who thought we'd be home by Christmas and were convinced of that, then Christmas came, we weren't home, and they were depressed. And so that was sort of the Stockdale idea, and it was philosophy. But what a great leader he was. You know, he set the standard for all of us. He took torture when many of us probably should have been taking torture. He was just an outstanding guy.
And there's a major role, I mean, just of faith that occurred there as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Our faith.
Yeah.
Yes. I served as chaplain in the prison unit. Of course, we had to be secret. They didn't allow any kind of religious artifacts or service or anything else. And so we hid from them when we had our church services. But yes, it was faith was very important to me. Of course, I'm a man of faith. I'm a Christian, and we felt that when everything else is gone, you know, when you lose your fancy uniform and your jet airplane and your family and friends and all that stuff that you normally depend upon for your foundation, all that's gone, and you start looking for the stuff that you learn as a kid, you know, that we're kind of ethereal and kind of out of sight. And suddenly that becomes your foundation. And so, yes, faith in God, faith in our country, faith in each other, faith in ourselves, faith was vital in our survival.
Yeah. What can today's men and women who aspire to be leaders, what can they learn and take away from the experience that you and these other men had? What advice would you give to people who want to excel?
Sure. I do a lot of seminars on leadership. In fact, I was in Phoenix just a few months ago talking about leadership. And I believe that leadership is a matter of trust. A leader has to trust the people. The people have to trust the leader. And so establishing that trust means walking the talk, you know, being honest with people, being open and transparent. To me, that melds the trust so that people will follow you into battle and will and accomplish the mission that you put forth. I think another part of leadership is establishing these big, hairy goals. And that was pretty much what Stockdale and John McCain did. You know, return with honor was our motto. And Stockdale would say, there's no whining in the prison camp. Pull up your big boy pants. We've got a war to fight. And so he established. It was kind of crazy. Can you imagine? See, I was one of the youngest guys there. And so here's this lieutenant junior grade in this 8-foot by 8-foot prison cell, you know, no books, no telephone, no television, not a window to look out. You know, I'm just in this 8-foot box, and I get this message tapping on a wall. You know, this is the code that we established. And I get this message from Stockdale. And so here are the rules of the prison camp. I mean, I don't need any rules. I'm restricted enough. But, you know, as it turns out, discipline and rules actually give you freedom. And that's pretty much what happened was that that he told us, hey, this is the way we're going to act. And our role as warriors here is to defeat this enemy. Now, the thing we were defeating actually was propaganda. They wanted us, they wanted us to write letters and make tapes and all that stuff to the anti-war element. And they tortured guys to say that the treatment was good. I mean, it got that crazy. And so that was one of the issues that Stockdale put out is we will not give them propaganda. So it sounds like a pretty minor thing, I know, in today's world that that would be a big deal. But for us, it gave us a focus. It gave us a reason, you know, gave us a way to collect with each other and be proud of what we were doing. So it worked.
Well, and not only that, but it was incredibly important for the effort back home, because had there been you or other prisoners of war saying things like, we need to be out of this, that would have huge impact on the attitudes of the American people. And, you know, if you can't, the political leadership who run the wars would be, you know, very sensitive to those issues. And it could be very problematic.
Wasn't that how they tried to use Jane Fonda when she went there and tried to prop her up as this peacenik who would try to get you guys to say whatever they wanted you to say?
That's pretty true.
I mean, I think you and I have talked about this before. There's people who are in the Hanoi Hilton, you know, still have ill feelings towards Ms. Fonda.
As they should.
Well, it is
Hanoi true. Jane, as she's.
It is true that, you know, some of the guys, you know, I mean, we don't go to her movies, we don't support her, but, you know, I mean, ideally, we felt we were in uniform to protect her right to dissent. You know, I mean, that because we live in a country for nearly 6 years where they don't have that right.
Sure.
You know, they don't have demonstrations there. They have revolutions. and so in a kind of an idealistic point of view, we felt like that, yes, she had the right to say what she said. Now, coming to, you know, inside our enemy and saying those things, we thought that was a little much. But here's an interesting thing. You know, I travel a lot. I speak all over the country. And when I go to D.C., I go to the wall, to Vietnam Wall, and you know, say hello to some of my buddies that didn't make it. And I see a lot of veterans there who are very against Jane Fonda. And it's mostly not the POWs. You know, it's the guys who, some of them weren't even in Vietnam. They, you know, they wear the camo and they parade around and they hate Jane Fonda. I think you'll find that overall the POWs, we try to understand. We're not happy at all that she was there. And we don't support her at all. But, oh, by the way, she's an American. She has freedoms, and we were fighting for those freedoms.
No, it's a. I mean, you encapsulate the very essence of what it's all about in that statement. That's pretty profound and amazing.
Well, that's I mean, that's indicative of the type of growth that happened amongst those 500 individuals who came out. That they're it was about moving forward, not looking back.
Very true. Very very true.
You know, so Jane did what she did, and we defend her right to do it, and. And yeah, we don't like her, and in terms of what she did, and the issues that it caused inside the camp, which was well documented.
Now there is some misconception. You know, if you go to the internet and then you know type in Jane Fonda and Vietnam, there are stories there that she got some guys killed by exposing us, and that was not it's not true. Nobody ever got killed because Jane Fonda was there.
Right.
As I say, we didn't like her being there, but we weren't necessarily hurt physically because she was there.
Interesting. That's good clarification. Now, your book, I'm No Hero, is the name of it. I would respectfully disagree, Charlie. But what is the, I mean, we who have had no idea what you went through because we weren't there. We look at those types of things and yes, you didn't ask for it. You didn't, you know, aspire it to do it, but it happened and you came out of it an amazing person. And to me, that is heroic. But what would you say to people who say, I mean, I'm having a hard time articulating it because I really do think that you are a hero, and I know that you don't view it that way. But what? Why don't you? I mean, it's. I know you don't want to be, you know, pompous about it, but you went through an amazingly difficult and challenging thing, which has been inspiring to millions of people, and you know, we do things differently as a country as a result of what you guys went through.
Interestingly enough, you know, during the campaign when John McCain was running against Trump, and Trump says he's no hero, you know, show me a guy who's a hero. I got a call from Anderson Cooper, and he wanted me to be on his show. I'm not a big fan of Anderson Cooper. Actually, I'm more of a fan now than I was then. But so I'm on live TV, and he says, you know, he said, what do you think about Trump saying that McCain's not a hero? And my answer was this. McCain never called himself a hero. I don't think he will ever see anything that John ever said or wrote that established himself as a hero. We military guys we do our job. And in reality, I'll tell you this, the first several months that I was a prisoner of war, I felt really, really shameful, embarrassed that I had given up, you know, that I had surrendered to the enemy. Fighter pilots are not supposed to surrender. That's not in the Top Gun playbook. we don't surrender. And everybody felt that way. And when we came home, we were really surprised that people thought we were heroes because we did not accomplish our mission. And so we didn't feel like heroes. So that's kind of the reason the title of my book is that, you know, there are a lot of people that did a lot of amazing things that I didn't do. I survived. Okay. And I've used that experience, you know, and the lessons learned in that experience to make a pretty good life for myself, as the other guys have as well, in the military. And that 90% of us stayed in the military. 90% of the POWs stayed in the military, which is pretty amazing.
It is.
And we've done great things as well, but not because we ever thought we were heroes.
Yeah. Well, Charlie, you are a hero.
Well, I've known you for several years now and got to know you a little bit just through our work with a pretty inspiring nonprofit, Bouldercrest. And the work that you're doing inspiring our current veterans, you know, to use you as an example to grow out of whatever trauma they've experienced in the darkness of war has been inspiring, and that makes you a hero.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Thank you for that. You know, something that's that we're doing now, we're trying to help the POWs in Ukraine, soldiers over there, preparing them for the hardship, and families as well. And so we're putting together a program. Boulder Crest is involved as a matter of fact, to try to, to try to pass along some of the wisdom, if you will, that we learned through the hard knocks of being a prisoner of war.
Wow, good for you. Wow. Well, I'd encourage anyone to go to charlieplum.com, order the book, learn more about Charlie. Charlie, thank you so much for taking the time. We can't thank you enough for your service and for the inspiration that you've been to millions of people since then and continue to be, and that's wonderful.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah. And Chris, I really appreciate your helping tell my story.
Great. Yeah.
Well, God bless you, and thanks so much for being on. Thanks for your friendship.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everybody.